Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Coming up in just a few moments, Neil Coulong, USA Today. We'll talk about Miles Garrett, Mason Rudolph. And Friday, Joe Lenardi, Bracketology, and Nate Bauer, Blue White Illustrated. First, our play-by-play call of the day. Speaking of Joe Lenardi, a St. Joe's game winner.
Four. Brown to trigger it in. Finds Edwards. Was not fouled. To Brown, gets a look for the win! St. Joe's! No timeout for Davidson. The hoist! The winless streak in conference is over!
And Joe Lenardi, if you don't know, works for St. Joe's. Big win for the Hawks last night. Exciting finish to it as well. All right. So many big stories going on right now. Big stories. Everywhere you turn, seems like there's a big story. Well, one of them happens to be Mason Rudolph, Miles Garrett. So with that, we bring in the outstanding Neil Coulong. Neil, welcome. Great to have you with us.
That's the truth and then some. You have no idea. You have no idea. It was fantastically mediocre at football and fantastically well below mediocre at basketball. I don't think I've shot a basketball in 20 years, probably.
Well, that's a line I actually stole from Bill Raftery one time. He said to me, it was at the NCAA Sweet 16 in 2001. He says, Stevie Jones. He says, how do you like the round ball as opposed to the oblong ball these days? I said, oh, I said, the round ball's pretty good these days. Right now here at Penn State, they're both great. I'll say Mason Rudolph, Miles Garrett. What does it tell you about Mike Tomlin's staunch defense of Mason Rudolph and the kind of leader that Mike Tomlin is showing to be?
I think it speaks volumes that Mike Tomlin would spend capital he's stored away for a very long time on something like this. I tweeted about this yesterday, too. I don't think, and Tomlin's been the Steelers coach since 2007. They've had controversy. They've had issues that have come up. I don't think maybe more than two or three times, and I'm trying to think back of whether or not he went on a show to talk about Dan Rooney when he passed away. I don't think he spoke in the off season to a show like that or a radio station or anything in that time. That's how much this issue meant to him, and that's how important it was to him to defend his player. And I just, my opinion, it seems like he's got plenty of reason not just to want to do that, but almost to need to do that, simply because this continues to come up, and I'm confused why. I don't understand why one side would want to speak this openly about something they can't really prove in any way, while the other one is saying what he's saying. And for Tomlin to look at this as something that really is going to be talked about, it's a question he's going to have to answer the first time the Steelers play in prime time. He does the sit-down interview like he always does. He's going to be asked about it. This is going to come up on day one of training camp. The first time he speaks to the media, people are going to ask him about it. He knows that. He does not want to create more of this stuff to have to answer to later. The fact that he did, and he did in no sense of compromising in terms of the words that he chose, vehemently shot down the entire thing, knowing that he's bringing a lot more of this into the locker room. I think it speaks very highly to a man with very strong convictions, knowing to him what is right and wrong, what he needs to say, what he doesn't need to say. And I think, if anything, it speaks to his feeling of the locker room that he's overseeing, the men that he's leading. The fact that he feels they can handle that as well. They can handle this conversation. I don't think he's acting alone. I think he's speaking on behalf of the players on the team, certainly the ones who were on the field that night. He's sending a message to all of them. I'm going to defend you. I have your back. You should have each other's backs as well, and let's go get to work. I think that's a real change of direction, I think, from what we've seen of this team over the last couple of years.
The only other person in the neighborhood of what happened was Pouncey, right? Has he? Is it a case where maybe he has spoken to Pouncey, and Pouncey has confirmed to him maybe Rudolph's version of things, or that, hey, look, I didn't hear anything? I mean, does that help in this case if Pouncey, because he was the only person I remember being close enough, right?
I would say DeCastro probably.
DeCastro, okay.
DeCastro, and there was, to a point, Foster. I think Foster was probably closer at the moment. Garrett alleges Rudolph said what he said. But in the heat of the battle, I mean, you got to understand, it's not that loud on the field. But they're hitting each other, they're grunting, other people are yelling out, you know, signals and directions and things. And they have mouth guards in. They're not looking at each other face to face.
You're right.
If something was said, I can't say, honestly, everyone around it would have heard it.
Right, okay. But, I was just asking. I just, because I don't
know.
Yeah,
Pouncey, though, saw what happened. And I think they're, at that point, if you listen to the volume of the broadcast, see, the stadium is probably half empty now. The game's over.
Right.
It's not like anyone's cheering or yelling. I think people could have heard anything that was said, and perhaps something was said that's different than all of this that we haven't brought up. Pouncey reacted a certain way, and I think everybody can agree to that. The question that I would have then is Pouncey sees something he doesn't like, and he, you know, he's suspending himself with his actions. He knows that, but he's not going to allow what he saw happen to continue happening. Why was Garrett's reaction not like that if he heard the words that he did? What inspired him to hit Rudolph over the head with his own helmet was Rudolph coming over to try to get the helmet back.
Yeah.
Not that he said anything.
Right.
If Garrett had said, when he was coming back for my helmet, that's when he said it, then you might say, well, whether or not somebody else heard it, but Garrett reacted to something. If the end of this entire entanglement was Garrett rising to the point where he's going to assault somebody with a deadly weapon, you'd think it would have been earlier in the scuffle than it was. Up until that point, a lot of it really was just kind of end-of-the-game frustrations. I think Rudolph reacted negatively to getting sacked by Garrett yet again. I think that was like the eighth time that game he'd been sacked. I'm not condoning it, but they're scuffling, they're shoving each other a little bit, even the helmet thing coming off. At the end of a game, it's like, yeah, guys are, they're tired, they're heated. It's a frustrating night for Mason Rudolph.
Sure.
I don't think Garrett did anything up until that point that was really that big of a deal. It was at the point where he hits him over the head, you've got a problem. Why didn't he react like that right away? That's the part I don't really understand. But diving down the rabbit hole on this is really pointless. I've tried to do it stupidly a couple times now on Twitter. The reality is nobody heard anything that he said. Garrett is the only one who is supporting the idea that he said this, with the exception of John Dorsey coming in at the 11th hour and all of a sudden copping to the whole thing. It doesn't make any sense to me. I'm not really buying it, and obviously Mike Tomlin doesn't either, and I would imagine when Pouncey is asked the exact question that you just asked me, he's going to repeat the same thing. he didn't hear anything. He saw his teammate getting attacked, so he jumped in. I think that, if anything, is just more positive about the makeup of the Steelers team than anything else. And if you ask anybody in that locker room, they would probably agree that Pouncey is the one guy that they would react the way that he did. And I think they were galvanized by that. I think that's why they went out when they played Cleveland 2 weeks later and mopped the floor with them.
Right. Rams, Broncos not sending assistant coaches to the combine. Your thoughts?
I think a team today with the technology that's available, I think you have a much better sense of who the players are going into the combine. And many of them want to see the players live to confirm what they've already scouted, what they've already determined to them to be their athletic prowess. If anything, we talked about this last week too, teams will send guys there to interview the players, to talk to them, to get to know them.
Yeah.
you don't necessarily need a full team of people there to do that.
I agree, I think it might help.
Mm-hmm. I also know if you ask any team employee who's invited to the combine to go work, certainly ask anybody in the media that goes to the combine consistently, a lot of it is one big networking party. So
sure.
I can understand why a team would not want to spend for certain coaches, representatives, or whatever to go, to not add fuel to that. If there's business that they want to conduct, this is what they want to do. They're going to go in and do it with the people that they have. That said, I think you're better off going than not going. But I can understand why a team would not, feel that it's imperative that all of these people go. I think it's a little bit different, and really they're saving a couple drops in the bucket compared to what they're spending annually on scouting by not sending a couple guys to the combine. If they want to pinch pennies that tight, I can't blame them for that. I don't think there's necessarily a ton that you can come up with at the combine that you need 20 people there to validate. So I get where they're coming from, but the fact that nobody else is doing that seems a little bit odd. We'll see if that trend picks up or not. It's interesting. It's kind of attention grabbing, but I think they'll be able to scout the guys that they're intending to scout without a whole lot of limitation.
Right. Yeah. I mean, because I think if you're going to draft, if you're going to spend a draft choice and spend money, it's a big pick. I don't care if it's the sixth round pick or it's the second round pick. It's a big pick because you don't know in the sixth round you get at 199. Guess who? Okay, at 199. Guess who you get? You could get Tom Brady. You don't know. I think you've got to talk to them, and I think at some point you do have to see them. But that doesn't have to be this weekend or next weekend. I mean, it can be at an individual workout. It can be at a pro day for a college. You have time to do all that there. You don't have to, you don't need to be in the group setting.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. This is only the start of the real direct contact that they'll get with all players. They have the Senior Bowl. They have, all-star games and things like that. This is the beginning of the time that they'll sit down with all prospects. So it's their first exposure to the underclassmen, per the rules at least.
Right.
And it's the start of a process in which they'll see them again at pro days. And from there, they're going to determine who they want to bring in for individual workouts. There's a lot of information that you're able to discern during this. And I'm of the belief that this is where they're going to find out what they know about these players, their character, their maturity, their level of leadership.
Sure.
Those are things that you figure out in, granted, they're essentially speed dating with a lot of these guys. But they know what they're looking for. They have experience with doing this. Guys are going to be coached up, and you recognize that. But how are they handling it? How relaxed do they seem? These are all things that you pick up inherently anyway. And I agree with you. You need to be face to face with them. You need to put them in that hot seat and ask them questions to see how they respond to it, to really get a sense of who they are and how they can fit in with the culture that you're trying to build as an NFL franchise. It makes more sense to me to go down there and do that than it does to say, wow, he ran a 4.35. I would have randomly guessed that he would have run a 4.41. A little bit faster than I thought when he's running, on an open track in spandex. Not at all the same thing with the ball in his hand, with 10 pounds of armor around his body, chasing psychotic safeties down the field. It's a different game altogether, but you get a good. There is obviously a big difference between 4.3 and 4.7, but the player that reacts on the field and can move within the game, the speed of the game, can go from a 4.7 to a 4.3 and vice versa. So I don't think the physical stuff you get a whole lot from. Height and weight I think is kind of important. Validate whether this guy is fast or not. Outside of that, it's a game that often comes down to 1/100th of a second, but it's not a player's ability to run at that speed in the combine that determines that on the field. So get to know who they are, find out who they are as young men and potential contributors to your franchise. That's really what you're looking to do.
I always tell people the game's a little different when 11 people consumed with hate are chasing you.
Yeah, if and when they're coming to get you, that's a little bit different of a scenario than running straight ahead to a laser across a line, 40 yards down the field. Get the guys that are paid to destroy you physically coming after you. Then we'll see how quick you are.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Neil, always a pleasure. Appreciate you very much.
Definitely. Thanks for having me, guys.
On USA Today, back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Great to have you with us on the show today. Last night, tough one for Penn State. Just couldn't score. Illinois shortened the game. Penn State had a chance a couple times to maybe expand a lead about midway through the second half. If they were able to do that, well, guess what? Things then change because now Illinois has to change the game plan. They want to play a game they don't really want to play. They don't want to run with Penn State. Even though Illinois has a very good caliber of athlete, they still don't want to run with Penn State. And they didn't. And because they could play the game at the pace they needed to last night, because Penn State could not put the ball in the bucket consistently enough, that open the door for Illinois to win it. Again, if Penn State had been able to, as I mentioned, midway through the half, there was that 90-second time, that 90-second period of time where Penn State had a one-point lead, and they got stops. And they couldn't get an additional basket or two, which would have made Illinois change its game plan. I think if Illinois changed its game plan, I think Penn State would have probably won the game by six themselves. But when you're two of the players that you count on offensively, they don't have to be hitting on all cylinders. But when Lamar Stevens is 3 of 11, and you're not being critical of Lamar because they're not here without Lamar, and Miles Dredd's 1 of 8, so they're a combined 4 of 19. You need somebody else to pick it up in their stead, and last night was one of the few nights all season where somebody else did not step up and pick it up. So, day off today, back to work on Indiana tomorrow. Indiana, by the way, plays at Minnesota tonight. Rutgers is at home for the 200th time this season as they take on Michigan. And Joe Lenardi is on the show Friday to talk about brackets, and Nate Bauer will be on the show Friday as well, and Matt Cotrillo will be on the show.
That's right, as always,
making picks with the king.
I got some catching up to do.
What went wrong now? I don't even know. I have no idea how.
Well,
we even did,
I lost. So. I lost the Memphis UConn game. Of course, it was a close one, and then you and I got screwed over by Clemson.
Oh, did I pick
when they upset, Louisville?
Oh, okay.
You know, right. You and I at Louisville, and the King at Clemson. So it's you.
Wow.
It's you at first place right now at 15-4. The King is 13-6, and I'm 12-7.
So what are the standings again?
You're 15-4.
Okay.
King is 13-6.
Okay.
I'm 12-7.
Wow. Well, if you were to give me Clemson, Louisville all over again, I still would have picked Louisville.
Me too.
So, I mean, it's not, that's not, you give me that pick 10 times during the course of the season, all 10 times, I'd still pick
Just
Louisville.
Just Louisville apparently forgot to show up in that game.
Well, they lost. They lost twice last week. You know, look, college basketball is a long season. San Diego State is undefeated. We have not seen an undefeated team since the 76 Indiana team. Everybody loses. And not only that, they lose multiple times in the season. It's just the way it is. It's a sport that has, because of the number of games and because of the spreading of talent, there's just more balance in it. More teams can beat somebody else. It's been like that for a long time in college basketball.
And plus, it's probably the toughest sport to win on the road.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to win on the road. That's why Penn State being 5-3 on the road has been so impressive. Hey, Penn State being 5-3 on the road is huge. I think, what are they, 4-3 in the Big Ten on the road, and then they got that win at Georgetown. It's just, you know, it's hard. And Illinois, by the way, that was their fourth Big Ten win on the road last night. So it's not like they haven't won on the road either. At one point, Illinois won 7 games in a row. And now Illinois is going to hit the underbelly. They've got Northwestern and Nebraska coming up. So I said to Brian Barnhart after the game last night, I said, well, now you've got a 3-game winning streak. He said, well, he only won tonight. I said, no, you got Nebraska and Northwestern coming up. You got a 3-game winning streak.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Toy boat.
And Matt has gone off to Bucknell.
Hello, Steve. Can you hear me?
And Mark Lawrence is in the building.
You know your bench is way too short when you bring me in here to either run a console or to talk about sports. Two things I never learned how to do in this building.
I mean, Bloomberg doesn't own a team, so that's out. Can't get to that.
Yeah, let's talk about Amy Klobuchar. That I could tell you something about.
Senator from Minnesota, sure.
Well, and I know 1% about the Astros being in hot water. So
yes, and I know 1% about Andrew Yang.
Oh.
All right, so based on the primary, 1% also knew about Andrew Yang.
Yep. Let's see. What else do I know about sports? I tried to listen to a little of the Penn State game last night on FS1, but I couldn't get it. My hearing's not too good. So well, it was just kind of a jumble.
That was the coaches being mic'd last night. Mm-hmm. And I talked to Joe Davis, the play-by-play announcer at Shoot Around yesterday, and I said, Joe, what is your role with this? He said, I'm more of a traffic cop with this thing as to how it works. Now, I did not and had no desire to listen to a replay of it. It has nothing to do with Penn State winning or losing. I never watch the replays anyway. I never do.
Really? Do you ever go back and listen to your games with your play-by-play?
No. I go to the next game. Usually, I can tell you right now, Mark, usually at the end of a broadcast, the late Gil Santos, who did the Patriots for 40 years, and people know I've talked about him as my mentor, because for 4 years he did Penn State, and I was the third announcer on the football network when Gil was the play-by-play guy. So for me, it was like being in a living play-by-play classroom. He told me on a couple of different occasions, he said, you'll get to the point in your career where you're going to be the first one to know when you've done it right, and you're going to be the first one to know you've done it wrong. And he's right about that. I can usually tell you after the game which mistakes I made and where they were. Because you'll sit there and go, nah, I didn't quite get that one right. Right? Yeah, you know right away. I mean, it's not, you know, you don't need any help from anybody along the way. Like, you know, and if I need any advice from somebody, then I call somebody I trust about it.
So you do get to that point. And so I don't go back and listen to what I do. The only time I ever listen to it is if I'm doing the Inside Penn State Athletics show and there's a big moment, big play, something like that I'd like to start the segment with. Then obviously I do listen to that because, I mean, I want to start the segment with that, like an incredible player, game-winning play, with the player then talking about it. So you're just trying to do some production value there. That's the only time I ever listen to it.
Well, I listened to quite a few of your games, and I can't ever remember listening where it sounded like you lost your footing or you weren't sure where to go or were clueless about what was happening, unless, of course, it's still a mystery as to what, you know, literally is what is happening on the field. I don't know what you'd go back and fix.
Well, no, I can tell, for example, if I've made a player. I can tell right away if I made a player identification mistake. I can tell, I can tell you twice last season where I accidentally said, for example, you know, inside the 20. It was actually inside the 25. And then I corrected it right away after that. Just lose your bearing for a second quick. Like, oh, yeah, that's 25, not the 20. I did that twice last season. But I know right away, like as soon as the game's over, I can think, okay, that one I should have done better. That one I should have been quicker on that one. Be a little slower in identifying the name of that player because his number's so close to somebody else. You know, I'll do that sometimes. But if I keep stuff like that to, like, fewer than five, then you feel like, okay, did fine. Yeah, you did fine on it. But I'm sitting there. I know what's, and people will say, oh, you went crazy on that play. It's always controlled excitement. You know exactly what you're saying and why you're saying it. Hmm. You know, it's not, people, oh, you went crazy on that. Like, no, I knew what I was doing. Right? And how I was doing it. It's not that it's calculated. It's just when you've done a lot of them. Let's see. I'm trying to think now. I do know the numbers. Let's see. Last night was what? Game 26. So last night was game 1,130.
of any Penn State game for you?
Basketball.
Oh, just basketball. Okay. Wow.
And football, Jack and I have done 252 now.
Holy smokes.
Yeah. And then I did another 88. As the third guy, and I even filled in as the analyst sometimes in the 80s, early 90s. So I did another 88 of those. So it's like, what, the 340, wow. but 252 play-by-play.
Well,
so
now you're in a rut. You're stuck now. You have to keep doing it.
Yeah.
If it weren't
there's been no job advancement. I'm still doing the same thing I did. You know, there's been no job advancement. I've just not been able to, you know. It's the same old job every day.
Well, if there's any consolation, I've done the 7 o'clock news here at WKOK since 1987, so with a little break in between.
A little break in between, yeah. Well, yeah, I filled in for basketball for the first time in 1981. Penn State, there's a famous, and Penn State fans will know what I'm talking about. There's a famous Penn State football game in 1981 at Pitt. Where Pitt with Dan Marino was ranked number one. And number one Pitt and Dan Marino bolted out to a 14-0 lead. And they're driving again. And they're going to try and make it 21-0. And Roger Jackson made a big play at the goal line and stopped him. And Penn State went on to score 48 unanswered points and beat Pitt 48-14. Now, Penn State fans, to them, that is one of the top five games in their lore of Penn State football. But for me, that was also a significant day because Fran Fischer and John Grant were doing the football game that day. They had nobody to do the basketball game against Bloomsburg. So that was my first game of doing play-by-play in the Penn State Basketball Network was that night because they were down doing the Penn State Pitt game. So as a footnote to one of the more famous games in Penn State history, that's where I started my Penn State basketball career.
It's an asterisk. You are an asterisk, Steve.
I mean, I'm an asterisk. I mean, I'm right up there with the Astros. I'm an asterisk.
Well, yeah. All right. Well, let's get off of Steve Jones a little bit, and with the Astros, what options does the commissioner have? You know, I know just enough about this to know that he's in between a rock and a hard place as to what additional penalties or whatever. I don't even know what else it would be.
He's between a rock and a hard place in part because of how the investigation started. They already had a former player, Mike Fiers, the pitcher, interviewed by Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic and also Fox Sports and MLB Network. So it's out there. Well, now, after he does that, you now have the option to interview him. So they've got that part. Now, what part can you control if you are Major League Baseball? Well, you have control over all the management part of it. Management is not unionized. So if I want to talk to the manager, A.J. Hinch, and interview him, I can. If I want to talk to Jeff Luhnow, the GM, I can. Jim Crane, the owner, I can. Alex Cora was the bench coach of the Astros, and at that point was the manager of the Red Sox. I can talk to him. Carlos Beltran was then named the manager of the Mets. I can talk to him because guess what? They're not unionized. I can talk to them. They may stonewall me, but I can talk to them. I can talk to all the video people with the Astros. They aren't unionized. I can talk to all the video people. And then I can offer to talk to the players. And if I feel I have enough in that circle of the manager, the GM, the bench coach, Beltran, former player, now manager, so the union can't help him, right? Mike Fiers in particular, I can talk to, if I think I have enough, then I can go to the union and say, I've got all this, I want to talk to this player, they want immunity. No immunity. Here's the deal. They're all on the verge of being suspended. Right? And you can cry a river all you want, but they're all on the verge of being suspended because of what they did. And so, I think they should have handled it that way. Instead, they decided they needed to talk to the players about how this was done. And when in doing it, they granted immunity. And now the key to stopping it are suspensions without pay. That's the key. Because let's face it, Steve Jones and Mark Lawrence are in the dugout, right? And of course, you know the basics of the plot, Mark. The basics of the plot were the video people were able to see that it's going to be a curveball, a slider, a fastball, whatever. I bang on a trash can in the dugout, bum, 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 three. That's a slider. So now the hitter knows what's coming. All right? Well, guess what? Let's take five guys, have all been suspended without pay for lengthy periods of time. Are you and I going to be inclined? I don't think I'm going to bash a trash can. Really, I wish you all the luck up there. Do the best you can figuring it out yourself.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's how you deter it. Right now, there's no deterrent. No player has been affected by this other than reputation, but they got to keep their rings. They had their parade. Champagne all over the place. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, at the end of the, you know, you and McGranahan at the end of the show, a little pouring of the champagne over the head.
What if they take away, can they take away the title? I mean, say you didn't win it. You know, like take a win away. We've heard of places, you know, where management has, organizers have taken away wins from an individual or a team. Can you do that in baseball, the World Series trophy?
They've been inclined not to do that.
Okay.
That's what they say. They've been inclined not to do that. But there's also another part to it. There was a point where, as you know, Joe Paterno had wins taken away from him, and Ohio State was in the same boat at that time with Jim Tressel. And I remember calling up Paul Keels, Ohio State's play-by-play announcer. I said, hey, Paul, remember that game in 2010 you and I did? He says, yes. Yeah. The NCAA says it never existed. It's people know who won, who lost. But for baseball, the problem they have right now is that when you are doing, now you've been doing a lot on the 2016 election, okay? Now, what is at the core of the 2016 election, in essence?
You mean 2020?
No, 2016.
Oh, looking back to 16, okay.
Looking back, what is at the core of it? The core of it is the integrity of it, correct?
Mm-hmm.
You want all of your elections to have integrity, fair?
Yep.
Same thing in sports. If I'm going to watch sports, I'm watching pro and con, rooting interest, whatever, that no matter what, I walk away without even doubting the integrity of the outcome. Yeah, you know, every once in a while you may complain about an official's call or about a mistake a player made, but you have to have a feeling of integrity with what you're watching. So now let's go back to 2017. Now you feel like that what you watched didn't have integrity. You now have gambling legalized in 19 states across this country. Sportsbook.
Oh, I never thought of that. Yeah, that's tied in.
Exactly.
I want my money back.
Exactly. What is it now? At that point in 2017, sportsbook was legal in Nevada. I think, you know, I think you could have, you know, like Delaware, Montana, Oregon were three other states. But they, but really, sportsbook was legal in Nevada. What if I placed a bet and I lost the money on it? Well, aren't I entitled to the money back because the integrity of the outcome has been questioned? I mean, why should I have lost money over something that may not have had integrity? Now, this is going to expand over time. There are 19 states that have legalized sportsbook, including Pennsylvania. So because sportsbook is so prevalent, you have to make sure across the board that integrity is the number one thing in your sport, that is beyond reproach. And this is just the tip of the iceberg, because either at the end of this week or early next week, the report on the Red Sox 2018 championship is going to be released. And it's going to be another round of integrity in baseball. Now let's get it back to a local level. And I've talked about this before, but it's worth reiterating. State College Spikes and the Williamsport Crosscutters are both members of the New York Penn League. Right now, the New York Penn League is one of the leagues among the 42 teams that are ticketed at the moment to be knocked out of the minor league system as of September 15th of this year. They're negotiating right now. Right now, Major League Baseball, Mark, needs a win. And they control the outcome of this. Do you, as Major League Baseball, want to come off as the heavy to 42 towns and small cities across this country by knocking and taking away their minor league baseball team? Do you want to come off as the heavy? Because right now, you don't look good, period.
Disregard right. 2017, disregard the spikes and the crosscutters and all the other, which teams right. have tremendous local interest.
Right. I mean, they have control over that. So if they want to get a victory, all they have to do is announce, hey, look, we've come to an agreement. Everybody gets to stay in place. We're going to keep the system in place for at least the next 5 years. Okay? And then we'll revisit this in 2025. That's all they have to do. They need a win. And to me, the easiest win for them, because this situation with the Astros is no win for them. The situation with the Red Sox next week will be no win for them. The situation with PEDs for them and the Hall of Fame vote every year is no win for them. So they have problems on many different fronts. There's one area they can control and get a victory and at least make some people feel good about baseball, and that is to solve that issue. To me, that's the one they control a win over.
Well, I hope they do. You have an appointment later this year.
Yes, I do. Well, I mean, they'll play this year, but I think they'll get this thing resolved because I think cooler heads are going to prevail and somebody's going to look around and say, you know what? We can't keep looking like idiots. We'll come back with more in a moment because Mark and I are together. Nobody on the planet would consider idiots on this show. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Let's get to the good news of the day. And the really good news of the day is Ryan Newman. Ryan Newman today, after that horrific-looking crash on the final lap of the Daytona 500, actually walked out of the hospital today hand-in-hand with his two young daughters. I mean, walked out. No assistance. He was treated and released today from Halifax Medical Center. That's the good news of the day. They say he showed great improvement. They said he'd been fully alert, walking around Halifax Medical Center. They said he was kidding around with the staff, with friends, family, was playing with his two daughters, and then later today, actually, they released him. And he walked out. I mean, when I mean walked out, like not in the will, he walked out hand in hand with his two little girls.
Wow, if you saw that crash, boy, you thought he'd be in the hospital for weeks or something.
Well, when they put the black tarp over the car, you're like, uh-oh, that's not good. And as they were doing that, trying to get him out of there. Well, that's just great news. Very popular driver. He's won 26 times. I mean, he is a terrific driver. And it's just great to see that he walked out of there today. I mean, nobody would have thought that. After watching that on Monday, nobody. I mean, here it is. It's Wednesday. It's only 48 hours later. I mean, let's face it. I mean, I know they've gone to great lengths, and justifiably so, to make every sport across the board safer. But obviously, auto racing. I mean, that tells you something about the makeup of the vehicle, everything like that. That's, you know, you're flying in the air 200 miles an hour, spinning around, the car's on fire, you land hard, the whole deal.
When your car gets hit where your head is,
yeah,
and not on the side where your body is,
right,
the corner where your head is,
and 48 hours later you're walking out with your little girls. Thank goodness. Okay, don't forget Joe Lunardi from ESPN will be joining us on Friday to talk about the NCAA tournament bracket as of this hour. Selection Sunday is still, 24 days away, 23 days away? And we'll talk with Joe about that on Friday, and Nate Bauer, Blue White Illustrated, on Friday as well. Today's show has been brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. My good friend, it was just an absolute pleasure spending the last half hour with you.
The pleasure's all mine.
Back tomorrow here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.